Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Just saying those words, juvenile criminal justice system, is a conversation we need to have. And I can't think of a better individual to bring that conversation alive than brother who stopped by to have that conversation, Jared Adams. You may not be familiar with Jared Adams' story, but you should be. And after this conversation, you will be for a lot of very good reasons. He was wrongfully convicted of a crime at age 17 and sentenced to 28 years in a maximum security prison at 17. After serving nearly 10 years and filing multiple appeals with the assistance of the Wisconsin Innocence Project, the Seventh Circuit United States Court of Appeals exonerated him. He used the justice system, injustice that he had encountered and endured as an inspiration to become an advocate and attorney for the underserved and certainly often uncounted. What motivated you to go, oh, hell no, I'm not going down like this. Yeah. I'm going to fight this because, you know, we've heard Black men say they're innocent before and it just falls on deaf ears and the system rolls over that and moves on. And what got you to find that angle that you could push back on and to pull the evidence that you needed to force the system to recognize your innocence?
So I want to make sure that I say this as well too. You know, the fact is, in this situation, this was a consensual encounter. This young lady became embarrassed because her roommate walked in.
Right.
And so in a situation like this, at first I was so angry at her. But as time went on, I realized, right, the police knew what happened the day after. Right. So it wasn't like they didn't put this together. And then one of the things was the police reports are written by the police, right? So she didn't testify to what was narrated in a police report, which caused a whole bunch of different turns of events, which like amended the charges and stuff like that. So when I think about this, this goes back to, again, the system itself. Right. The system itself that makes it so easy. Prosecutors don't bring cases like this, but all the time, especially when they know that there's doubt, they don't bring it because they're doing the right thing. They bring it because for African-American, especially men accused by white accusers, that's low hanging fruit. Michael, you can pad their stats with that. Right. You know, that's it.
Right.
We were referred to as the three Black men from Chicago so much. I thought that was our name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the thing that also sticks out is when I was in the police station telling them what happened, they kept saying to me, boy, you really don't want to have yourself involved in this.
Right.
Boy, you know, you just, and then they call us men in the trial. So what I wanted to tell you at the beginning, when I was telling you about how what they kept asking me, you want to save yourself from this, just tell us, you know, about what your friend. So they had the statement all along. So they knew that the young man had said, look, the one guy stayed playing video games and then he went up to go join his friends. So that was their way of trying to get me to testify falsely against something that my friends did not do. And you know what, Michael, as I represent kids now, that happens all the time. And kids trying to save their own lives will lie on other folks trying to get out of trouble.
They will. And it is. Rather commonplace, especially when you factor in race and sex. So in the case where you've got three young Black males and a young white female in that situation where she decided and consensually agreed to participate in whatever act she wanted to participate in with at least two of those young Black men, gets caught doing it. Now it's like, oh, snap. This was not consensual. They were raping me. And oh, by the way, the guy who just walked into the room was part of it too. that narrative is something that goes back 400 years.
Yeah.
It goes back 400 years. But here's the thing that strikes me about your journey and why it's so significant at this time, Jarrett. I remember as Lieutenant Governor going to Eager Street Academy. I spent a lot of time at Eager Street Academy in Baltimore City, which is juvenile detention center, which has a built-in academic program.
Yeah,
really one of its one of a kind in the country. And I would talk to these young kids, and these are boys 13 to 17, because at 18, they're moved out of the juvenile system and into the adult system. And I would look at these young boys and I would tell them, do not let this define the rest of your life.
That's it.
What I love about your story is that as much injustice as you encountered, as much burden that was placed on you by the system that deemed you guilty before it even had the evidence in the conversation. Yeah. And then in the face of the evidence, the testimonies of third parties who were there with you, who said, this brother did not do this.
Mm-hmm.
You still found a way to not allow this to define you.
Yeah.
What do you say to the young men and women that you represent today,
mm-hmm.
as a lawyer in a system that is designed to defeat them? What do you say to them on that point?
So I say exactly what you just said in terms of, you know, it shouldn't define the rest of your life. And these are two things that I say, right? I say this all the time. Never, ever allow someone's perception of you to become your reality. I say that often. Mm-hmm. And the perception is young, black, rapper, ball player, no good, don't believe, all of those stigmas and stereotypes that come. And I also say this as well. Don't let anything in life that has happened to you be a period where God has only intended a comma to be.
Right. Amen. So
in my life, God never intended for me to be Jarrett Adams, wrongfully convicted, gets out by the Innocence Project day in. He meant for me to be able to do what I'm doing now. And I look at it as this. And to answer your question you asked earlier, my whole thing about this was this. It was embarrassing for my mother, for my family. These are some people who are proud to be African-American, to be mothers of black boys. And when my mom and my aunts started to curl up from society and not go to their church, not go to their favorite functions because they were tired of people asking, how's Jarrett doing? You know, mm-hmm. is he okay? Because no one passed, he's in prison, but here's you pass the butt.
Right.
No one does.
Right.
So when I locked in on that, that was my thing, Michael. So when I'm talking to kids, when I'm talking to clients, I tell them to give me one thing that you cannot do or live without. For me, I could not do and I could not live without getting my lick back for my mother and my aunts.
Right.
So I didn't care what I had to go around, go over, under, or right through. I was gone, Mike. And that's why I 30 days after getting out, I was in school. 30 days after getting in school, I was sitting on someone's couch getting therapy, right?
Yeah.
2.5 years after that, graduated, accepted into my 4-year college. 2 years after that, graduated, accepted into Loyola Law School. So it was always for me, I'm not going to never let you forget what you tried to snuff out.
Let me tell folks why what you just heard is so powerful and so impactful. In the book, Jarrett notes, quote, my attention shifts back to the courtroom where the same system that disposed of me is about to proclaim me a lawyer. I accept that change, real change, will come slowly, one tiny step at a time. But you have to commit to taking that step. I picture my grandfather, Buddy, and I hear him say, You got to keep going, Jared. You can't go back. Keep moving forward. I look Keith Finley in the eye, exhale, and blink back my tears. Then I raise my right hand. For young people out there, you need to understand what that moment means in the rest of your life, in the rest of your story. You're not defined by the particular problem you have right now. You're not defined by the difficulty of the situation you have right now. What defines you is when you can take that and help it move you to a place that you know is better for you, your family, and your community. The story of Jared Adams is that testimony to perseverance, to truth, and making the system right.
Thanks for listening to this quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Now, we'll be back with a full show soon, but in the meantime, you can go to Apple Podcasts, review us, give us 5 stars. Yes, we like the 5-star rating. Or you can listen on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcast on. Catch you later, folks.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.